This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. We are here every week, and we talk about subjects that we think are interesting and important and that you might want to know more about, people that you might want to know more about who are making a difference here in West New York. And, of course, particularly our target, On Target, is Western New York. Our history, our present issues, economics, cultural, whatever you might want to know. And the reason I'm sort of giving you a synopsis about that is because I was fortunate enough recently to hear about an author who has made quite a life study of all of the different aspects of the history of Western New York. Western New York is Rochester, Western New York too, I guess it is, but the area per se. And his history books have made quite an impact and have been really read by worldwide, as well as many people locally and schools and every book clubs and whatever. And we were lucky enough to catch up with him and to find him and to see if he would come and talk to us a little bit about the history of Western New York. And his name is Michael Keane. And I come to find out that he has made it to a sunnier, warmer climate. Hi, Michael. Should I be calling you a professor, or besides author, is there any other title I should give you?
Well, you know, I was going to ask you the same question.
I know, people.
You Judge, or I call you Penny.
Well, let's do Michael and Penny. How's that work?
Okay.
All right. Sounds okay. So, Michael, I wanted to just first of all let our listeners know a little bit about your background, how you came to be interested in the history of Western New York, and how you came to be an author of these various books that we're going to talk about.
Right. Well, actually, my background leading up to this would not be the recommended background, but I had been a financial advisor for, 25 years, and I used to be headquartered in downtown Rochester, and a client of mine had gotten a movie camera, and we began talking about the possibility of making a documentary, and at that time, Midtown Plaza, which is where I was stationed just right across the street from, was in the process of being closed down. And I said, you know, it might be interesting to look into the history of basically the first indoor shopping mall in America, which was Midtown Plaza. And it was in doing the research of that led me to discover these fascinating aspects of not only Rochester history, but Western New York and New York history. And so one thing led to another, and I eventually stumbled upon a story about the first murder that ever occurred in the city of Rochester. And from there, one thing led to another. I actually did the reverse of writing the books and then making the movie. I made the movie and then wrote the book. And so I made a documentary called The Murder of William Lyman about the first murder in Rochester and the first execution. And it turned out that little documentary won Best Film at the Rochester International Film Festival. And I couldn't have been happier. It was so much fun to put it together, to learn about the people involved, and then, of course, to eventually be able to make my way into the premiere and to realize I had won Best Picture. But it all began that way, and one story beget the next, which beget the next. And it's just a simple matter, at least for me, of each time I learn about these little interesting historical nuggets is to ask the question why. And it's the pursuit of those answers or that answer that led me to what now is I've written 8 books, I've produced 8 audio books, I made 4 historical documentaries, I have a 40-episode podcast. I get a little tired just even, you know, repeating it all. But it's been a tremendous amount of fun. But that's how it all began, just one day wondering why.
And when you're talking about the different subjects that you mentioned, for example, that is a very fascinating to me. What was the first murder in Rochester in the first death penalty case?
Well, it basically involved a grain merchant by the name of William Lyman, who was on his way home one night and thought that it would be prudent to take the day's receipts home with him, because his office had previously been attempted to been robbed. And so it was on that night that he was on his way home that his body ends up being discovered by a little 10-year-old boy. And in the discovery of the murder, it was found that underneath the man's hat were $5,000 in banknotes, which was the money that he was bringing home that night. Now, this is in 1827. And so $5,000 in banknotes in 1827.
Was a million, $2 million.
About.
I just made that up.
The fact that he had it under his hat, it turned out to be a phenomenal beginning of the story. And before the day was over, they managed to capture the killer. And what made the story so delicious from my standpoint is that I found, and as a judge, you're going to appreciate this, I think, they found the original court transcripts. Which were, you know, the murder occurred, I don't have my notes in front of me, but let's say in March, the trial was held 7 months later. They didn't really waste a whole lot of time back then. And so when I found, which were being held at the Rochester Library, the downtown office, or downtown chapter of the Rochester Library, they didn't even know they had the court transcripts. And so when they were delivered to me, so to speak, they were in a little package. And as I unwrapped this package, I realized that I was the first person to have actually seen the court transcripts since the original court trial. And so I decided to tailor my documentary using the court transcripts verbatim. And as you go back through that period of time, the language of the early 19th century was so interesting. And especially when you get to the point where the judge sentences the killer to death, there's a lot of interesting parts to this, because it was not only the first murder, and of course the person who was found guilty was the first murderer, but he was also the first person ever executed in the city of Rochester. And it was those little details that lend themselves to the telling of the story, which I really can't tell you any more than that. You really have to watch the documentary, or to read the book or the story that was contained in my first book, The Folklore and Mystery of Rochester, or The Mystery of Hoodoo Corner. And so anyway, and I tended to, from that point on, realize that the written record of these murders and kidnappings and such were much more delicious than my trying to recreate what I think someone said or did. And it was all laid out before me. And so I just took advantage of the lay of the land, as they would say, and which was how I was able to tell these stories.
Well, I think, as you pointed out, having the transcripts and the original language and what actually was based on what actually was said and done makes it fascinating to us, you know, because I'm sure as you read it and you compare what it would be like today, even your time frame, you know, how long it would be for something. When, you know, in Buffalo, when they talk about McKinley and they talk about the killing and the execution and how it all happened, like, almost within days, it was so fast,
right.
And everybody is, you
right.
know. So now, when you progressed, first of all, do we have titles? Should we tell our listeners what titles they could be looking for as we talk about the books that you've written?
Well, sure. I had one that just appeared on YouTube Premiere. The book is available and is probably one of my more successful. In fact, they've all been pretty successful. They all have sold in very similar fashion. But one book in particular is titled Madhouse, The Untold Story of Insane Asylums in 19th Century New York. And it is, as the title might imply, the history of insane asylums that were established primarily in New York in the 19th century. You know, one thing about we who either still live or used to live in New York, especially upstate New York, is we forget at one point New York was the center of the universe. It truly was. And now we hear about Florida and Texas and California, you know, in terms of population. But back in the 19th century, the whole development of mental health care really is a story of New York. After that book came out, I wrote another book called Abandoned, The Untold Story of the Orphan Trains, which is an amazing New York story of how over 250,000 orphan children were sent by train, primarily from New York City, out to the Midwest to live with orphaned and desperately poor children by train.
This really happened. This really happened.
Yeah.
I
gave a talk once at a historical society in Perrington, which is one of the suburbs of Rochester. We had over 200 people show up. We were kind of shocked that this would happen, and I was approached by people who said, you know, I've been in the social service business industry for my whole life, and I never have heard of this story until now. But it's absolutely 100% true that over a 75-year period, 250,000 children were sent by train out to over 44 other states, also including Canada and Mexico, to have children literally live with farming families who chose them to live with them. There's many fascinating characters. As a matter of fact, most of my stories, one way or another, not only have a connection to Western New York, but to Buffalo in particular. And there's a... there's a man who's considered virtually a saint, Nelson Thomas Baker, also known as Father Baker. And Father Baker had an orphanage that he ran back in the latter part of the 19th century that factors into this story. And as a result of his work with orphanages back then, he literally is now up for sainthood. So there's a lot of the stories surrounding the books that have a significant connection to the Buffalo area as well.
I just want to interrupt for a moment in case you just tuned in. You're listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang, and we hope you listen every week. And today we are talking to author Michael Caine, who has written 8 history books, basically all about different factors or aspects of Western New York. And we've just been discussing a couple, but we I needed to move on in the sense that you just said the magic word buffalo. So everybody's ears perk up when they hear buffalo when they're listening to On Target, because as I said, we really care about Western New York. And you said that it was, people forget that New York, period, the whole state, and particularly Buffalo, was probably not only the biggest, but most important and successful and affluent area in the 1900s and after that a little bit, I guess.
Well, even more so. My next premiere program, which is going to be shown on YouTube Premiere on April 1st, is the story of the making of the Erie Canal. It's funny, when I probably didn't mention, but I now no longer live in New York. I live in Nevada. But when I arrived in Nevada, I began to make local libraries aware of some of my work. And many of them said, well, yeah, all your stories are about New York, but they're not about Nevada. We don't know if our patrons would be interested in that. And I said, you know what? If it wasn't for New York, and if it wasn't for the Erie Canal, there would not have been a Nevada.
That's right.
You know, you look at the history of Western New York from a period of, from roughly when the Erie Canal first opened up to around roughly at the end of the Civil War. And every major social, religious, and political movement that came about in the United States came about as a direct result of the Erie Canal and Western New York. It's a phenomenal story. Phenomenal people. The anti-slave movement began in upstate New York. The women's rights movement began in upstate New York. Some of the major religions began in upstate New York. And so, in a way, I'm cheating a little bit. All I'm doing is taking a look at these stories, these people, these events that all happened within a very short period of time and a very short or small geographical point in time. And what we have is really the history of this country and the amazing people that made it all possible.
Well, it is a microcosm. They always say that we in Western New York are a microcosm of the whole country, that a lot of parts of Western New York are like the Midwest, for example. And they give, you know, different examples of how crucial and what an impact Western New York has on the whole had on the whole country.
Right. And it even, I think, has that impact today. It comes to the fore probably most significantly during the Erie Canal story. But there's so many offshoots of that story. One of my books and movies was a story about William Morgan, who was a Mason and who was believed to have been kidnapped and murdered by the Freemasons. And it was a result of the Erie Canal, which kind of made that story more relevant in our area. The story of the Fox sisters, who were the first spiritualists who traveled basically through all major New York cities and towns, and also who traveled as far away as Paris and London conducting seances. They were from an area in Palmyra, New York, which is located only about 30 miles from the city of Rochester itself. So there's many of these stories of these fascinating people who all have, in one strange way or another, a connection to each other.
You mentioned, and I think it's important, the growth of various industries, how Western New York has been so influential in, well, it was the plants and the all of the different, I guess the canal really had a lot to do with it, but right. the Industrial Revolution and all that happened was really focused on us here in Western New York in many ways.
Well, right. I mean, the key takeaway to the Erie Canal story, at least the one that most people focus on initially, is that by the result of building the canal, the transportation of goods could now be much more readily sent, and it actually dropped the cost of goods by 90%. Also, in a very significant way, goods sold in Europe could now be sold in Chicago as a result of making the coming across the ocean, coming up the Hudson River, and then heading west on the Erie Canal. But the other thing that the Erie Canal did, and this is what I believe to be somewhat unique in terms of how I present it in my book and in my videos, is that it also facilitated human communications. You know, until then, the only way you could go from Western or Eastern New York to Western New York and out west is by horseback and through almost basically forest, and where it could take weeks and months in order to make that journey. But now, as a result of the Erie Canal and the invention of the packet boat and the extraordinary accomplishments of the Erie Canal with these locks and how you were able to go up and down, that it now facilitated human communications. And that's why the civil rights or the anti-slavery movement had begun in Western New York, and the women's movement had begun in New York. The Underground Railroad, a key aspect of the Underground Railroad was the Erie Canal. And so it's tracing the lives of these people, some of these incredible people like Frederick Douglass, Susan B. Anthony, you know, who we have heard about, but I don't think we've given proper notice to in terms of what they did in order to bring about freedom for millions of people eventually.
This is all so important because not only is it our history, but it's so relevant leading up to so current, many current affairs and current events that we're still talking about, you know, the women's
right.
movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, all of them were sort of related to the history of what you're talking about here in Western New York. How far,
right.
how far do you go in the books, in your eight books? What's, you know, current, what's the most current or what's the latest time frame?
Well, my latest book actually doesn't have a connection to Hart Island, or excuse me, to Western New York, but is the title of it is Hart Island. And for those who may be aware, Hart Island is located down near New York City. And it is the largest mass graveyard in American history. There's over 1 million people buried there. And in order to be buried at Hart Island, you more than likely were desperately poor. When you died, you had no one to claim your body. And as a result, you would be buried in a mass grave. Now, Hart Island was opened up as a mass graveyard back in 1869. But it's as current as today because about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, there was a famous drone photograph that, as a result of COVID-19 and the deaths in New York City hospitals and the fact that there were hundreds, if not more, people who died of COVID-19 and who were, their bodies were unclaimed, they were taken to Hart Island. And they were buried in mass graves. And so there's a photograph from a drone that actually shows the latest mass burial at Hart Island, which contained hundreds of people who had died of COVID-19. So it's as current as today. And in a way, they all are. But certainly Hart Island, although not with a connection to Western New York, certainly has a connection to New York history and to American history.
And as I said before, it's all amazing how everything has evolved and how what was new today is relevant today. Just like you said, Hart Island is in the news. Now, I can't carry a tune, but I'm telling you before we run out of time that I learned in school in New York City, I've got a mule and her name is Sal, 15 miles on the Erie Canal. So so
I think your audience wants to hear it, Penny.
You think so? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I do know it. I remember it all though, but maybe if they call me, you know. So listen, let me tell everybody, or let you tell everybody, Michael, author Michael Caine, where they can find your books, where they can get your books, how they can get your books.
Well,
and your podcast.
Right. The easiest way is to go to my website, which is my name. This is real simple. Michael, T as in Thomas, Keene, K-E-E-N-E, at cs.com. So MichaelTKeene.com. And from there, you'll see all my books listed. I produced a series of historical documentaries. There's a couple of them that are listed. Also, I produced a 40-episode podcast about Hart Island, and I'm very proud of that podcast. I managed to interview 40 people, renowned scientists, authors, and artists, about their books and their lives and how they relate to Hart Island. So again, if you go to MichaelTKeene.com, you'll have access to all that. There is a separate section if you wish to pick up a book. I have a couple specials going on. If you purchase the Hart Island book, you get the Madhouse book for free and a few things like that, just to make it interesting.
Well, it is interesting, and I know everyone that's listening wants to know more about it, so we thank you so much. She's a good old worker and a good old pal, 15 miles on the Erie Canal. I know the rest,
that's
too. Thank you so much. Hey, thanks for talking to us. And thank you so much, author Michael Caine. Everybody, listen to On Target again, please, next week with your host, Penny Wolfgang. Have a good week and goodbye, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.